Hello and welcome to episode 14 of the Diversified Integrated Sports Clinic podcast. My name is Dr. James Boyle. I'm a chiropractor here at the clinic and I'm joined by Dr. Tamara Ghazi.
Hi guys, always good to be back.
Another chiropractor here also and the founder of the clinic as well. And today we're joined by Laura Farrier. Did I say your surname right?
You did. I did.
Excellent. That's a good start. Laura is a yoga teacher from the UK, based in Dubai, but trained in India. Is that also all correct?
Yes, that's all correct. Excellent. You've done your research.
I've done a wee bit. I've got an A4 page in front of me and we'll see what happens. So great. Well, why don't you start off by just giving us a little summary of who you are, what you do, and we'll go from there.
Okay, so my name's Laura and as James said, I've lived here in Dubai for the last 7 or so years. I teach yoga full-time here in Dubai, mm-hmm. Mainly through one studio called Zen Yoga. Mm-hmm. I also do events and I do retreats around the world. Okay. And I guess I started my yoga journey just after university. So quite a long time ago. We'll just leave it like that.
Not really. 2002.
A long time ago. And I've been teaching full-time in Dubai since I moved here 7 years ago.
Okay. I was trailing through your webpage yesterday, which is laurafarrieryoga.com.
Yes.
And you trained in a couple of styles. You started off in Sivananda yoga, first of all.
Yeah. So I actually, when I first went to India in January 2008, mm-hmm. I joined a style of yoga that it's all under Hatha yoga. So all physical asana practice falls mm-hmm. under the umbrella of Hatha yoga. Mm-hmm. But I went with a particular lineage, a particular traditional style called Sivananda yoga, which is a sequence of 12 basic asanas, which as you learn, you can start to kind of vary and integrate more intermediate and advanced postures. Mm-hmm. So that was my first training. And then after that, I went to South India to Mysore and met my teacher, who's now my main teacher, and changed styles and went to study Ashtanga Vinyasa Yoga. And that's now my personal practice, although I still teach some Hatha.
Mysore is where Ashtanga is from, really, isn't it?
Yes. So it can get a little bit confusing because a lot of classes are called Mysore style. Mm-hmm. And Mysore is actually the city where Ashtanga Vinyasa originates from. Mm-hmm. Mysore style actually refers to the way that you practice, where you go at your own pace and practice in a room with lots of other people, all practicing at their own pace. And the teacher basically walks around and adjusts you. Oh. So it's not a led class. The teacher's not up at the front doing the postures. You know the sequence and they give you the poses on a piecemeal basis. So it's a very traditional way of learning. You only move to another posture once you've mastered the one before.
Is that the primary series, the primary, secondary, tertiary that
yes,
you're talking
exactly.
about?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So there's 6 series. Mm. Most people get to series 3. Mm. There's a few people on 4 and the 5th. Mm. There's not really anyone alive at the moment that I know that does 6, all okay. 6. So that primary series is what most people practice.
So I want to know why yoga, like what happened after university that you were like, I want to do yoga. Was it something that changed? I mean, did you grow up in London?
Yes. So I grew up in London. My mum actually did her first yoga class when she was pregnant with me and has always been interested in yoga. And so, and my mum actually now has a daily Mysore practice and Ashtanga practice herself, which I like to think that I had something
amazing
to do with, but she was actually practicing prenatal when she was pregnant with me. So I guess my yoga journey actually started before I was even on the planet.
Like
and she's always kind of maintained, again, through various styles, but she's always had quite a strong connection to yoga. My grandmother also grew up in India. In Calcutta, mm-hmm. and my grandfather also practiced yoga up until his death when he was 91.
Amazing.
Okay. But he started very late in life, and he got into it through my mum. So it was kind of, there was a family connection to yoga. Mm. And when I was a teenager, my mum sometimes used to take me to a yoga class with her or take me on a yoga retreat when I was like 16, 17. So when I got to university, I was already interested in doing it, and it really complemented my dance practice. So I was a dancer when I was a kid, mm-hmm. not professionally, but it was a big hobby of mine. And then the same through university. And I found a class while I was at uni, and I used to go quite regularly in the week through when I could, when like my lectures weren't on, which actually if you do university in London, you don't go to uni that much, unless you do a science. I did politics, so I had, you know, 4 or 5 classes a week, so I had a lot of time on my hands. Nice. Not that much money, but there was a woman who lived actually next door to me who was a Swedish, half Swedish, half English, and she was a yoga teacher, and I used to go to her and pay, I think it was like £3 a class.
Amazing.
So about 15 dirhams. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I would, yeah, practice with her twice a week. And then when I finished my degree, I just wasn't really interested in kind of staying in London and doing the classic, you know, get a flat, get a corporate job. Mm. So I moved to Thailand and continued practicing where I lived in Thailand. And then it just kind of built and built. And I found myself, I kind of found myself in India.
Amazing.
Without sounding too like a yoga cliche. I found myself. But I did. I went to India and my life completely changed in 2008. Mm-hmm. And that's when I did my first training.
You mentioned there before we started recording, you were also doing some scuba diving and video.
Yeah, so in Thailand, I didn't actually go there to practice yoga particularly. I actually went there to do my dive master course. Mm. And then instead of becoming an instructor, I decided to become an underwater videographer. Mm. So I used to film divers on their open water dives.
Oh my God, this is what we're going to do on the weekend.
Yeah, sure, why not?
Because I never knew this.
So yeah, so I used to film sharks and turtles and stuff like that. Edit them into videos and then kind of sell them at the end of the course as like a memento or a souvenir.
Yeah.
My job. Yeah. So that was my job in Thailand. And then after that I went to Honduras and taught English to fifth graders. Mm-hmm. Actually, I had to teach science and math and history. I had to teach the whole fifth grade, but in English.
Right.
That wasn't on the job description. I thought I was only teaching English. Suddenly I had to teach long division to 13-year-olds. And I kind of had a little bit of a self-practice by then. So I continued a bit in Honduras. There was no yoga in Honduras, so there was nowhere I could go. And then when I got to Canada, I lived quite far out from a town. So I bought a DVD and started practicing a bit at home. Mm-hmm. And then I just kind of thought, I'm just going to go to India and go to the source. And by that point, my mum had already been quite a lot to India, and her business is actually based in Calcutta.
Okay.
So she recommended for me to go to this particular place, and that's where I went and started my serious journey.
Yeah. Sorry, that was in Mysore then?
No, so that was at the ashram where I started Shivananda Yoga.
Okay.
So that was also actually in South India. It was in Kerala.
Mm.
So when I was planning my trip, and there'd been a few times in my travels in my 20s where I had thought about going to India, and for one reason or another, I changed my mind, or the dates weren't right, or a friend dropped out, or whatever it was. And so I kind of was going far more to Southeast Asia. And when I was in Canada, my visa was about to expire. I did that 1 year Commonwealth visa. Lived there for a year. It was freezing cold, minus 35. Tomorrow knows what I'm talking about. Yeah. Opened my front door, 3 foot of snow falls in, and I was like, that's it, India, I'm going. And so my mum recommended Kerala, one, because it's in the south, and it's a very beautiful state. You know, it's palm trees and coconuts, and it's a communist state, but there's a high literacy rate, and it's just a beautiful place with amazing beaches. So my mum said, as an introduction, as a girl traveling alone, it's a good way, you know, you're
good
not landing like right in the middle of Delhi at 3 o'clock in the morning. You know, you're easing your way into India. And she recommended that I go to this ashram because you've got quite a set schedule. Mm-hmm. So you're not kind of, you know, just wandering around, not really sure what you're doing.
Yeah.
And when I checked, they had a training starting the day that I was planning to arrive, or the day after.
Mm.
And I thought, okay, I can do the training. And then I had absolutely no intention of teaching. I was doing it purely for my own knowledge.
Oh.
And now here I am as a full-time yoga teacher. So
right. So when did you make that transition? Was it during that course that you suddenly thought, hold on a minute here?
No, it wasn't even really during the course. It was funny because I signed up with very little knowledge about, although, you know, my mum had practiced, my grandfather practiced, there's very much a focus in the West on the physical practice of asana.
Hmm.
There's not a lot on the spiritual side. And so my mum is a very spiritual person.
Hmm.
So I was kind of aware, but when I went to India to do this training, it was really just to learn how to do a headstand or a split or put my foot behind my head. You know, like I wanted to do cool physical stuff.
Yeah.
And I arrived and really kind of got a massive shock when I was introduced to the philosophy and you know, kind of the idea that practicing the physical just makes you mentally stronger to be able to cope with things in your life.
Mm.
And really that's the essence of it, is that you become a more peaceful, more compassionate, kinder person, like a nicer human being.
Mm.
And I wasn't prepared for that. I was just going in just to, you know, jump around on my mat and go up into a handstand, hopefully.
Yeah.
And so learning that through that month, I think just changed my perspective about what yoga was. And I got more and more interested in the philosophy and started reading more, and then stayed in the ashram for almost a year.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of under the tutelage of these teachers who've been teaching for, you know, 30, 40 years.
Mm-hmm.
And so learned a lot from them. And then I went to Goa just to, you know, hang out a little bit and have a break from ashram life of mm-hmm. waking up at 5 and going to bed at 8. And then just got asked to teach by a group of people on the beach and started teaching them a little bit. And it just kind of, it was an unintentional, it wasn't a strategic move.
It wasn't a plan.
No.
Okay. I think that's like the best kind of luck, you know. I think sometimes people ask me, like, why did you become a chiropractor? I'm like, I have no idea. Like, it just kind of happened. And I think, I don't know, I think it's a very lucky thing to have, especially when you love what you do and you follow your heart kind of and just ease into things. And I think
it makes it more authentic as well.
Yeah, it makes it more authentic. You love what you do. You're not going to, you know, to, no offense to people, but sitting behind a bank job from 9 to 5 and a lot of people complain about their lives and what they do. And sometimes you just have to follow your heart and like what life pans out for you to be. And sometimes it's not what you expect, but it's always the fun journey, I think, you know.
And then I think also if you approach something in an authentic way, then you're also less likely to compromise on what you know is right for you.
Mm-hmm.
So if you kind of stumble into something, which I definitely did with yoga, I learned a lot about myself in the process.
Mm-hmm.
And then through that, I'm now at a point where, you know, not only do I follow quite a traditional teaching, because my study has been in India and it's been from a few very authentic sources.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like that's a really important part of it as well, that, you know, you find yourself in this place and then you're very clear on who you are and what you're about and why you're doing what you're doing, as and not just kind of doing it just for the sake of it.
Yeah.
So
do you find it useful, or do you sort of return to that grinding, that sort of instruction back in India?
Yeah,
often enough?
I go every year. If I don't go, in yoga we call energy prana, and I kind of think of it like a battery. By kind of month 11, my prana's really low. I have to go and learn from someone, you know, higher than myself or with more knowledge than myself.
Yeah.
So I go back to my teacher every year in Mysore,
mm-hmm.
Sometimes for 2 months, but usually for one.
Mm-hmm.
And if he's doing a teacher training, I might assist him on the teacher training.
Mm-hmm.
And he, you know, obviously kind of kicks my butt, basically.
Okay.
So I do my own self-practice mainly here. Sometimes I practice with other people, but usually I'm alone.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the fire under my ass kind of dissipates as the year goes on, and then I need to go back, so he kind of whips me into shape.
Stokes it up a bit.
Yeah, and then I'm in that environment, you know. There's nothing like, for me, learning from a source. And, you know, my teacher's been practicing since he was 10 and teaching since he was 17. He knows what he's about, and he knows what he's talking about.
And he's there all the time and just living it.
Yeah, he's pretty much there all the time. I mean, he does worldwide workshops. He comes to Dubai. I bring him to Dubai once a year. He does Europe and Thailand as well. It's usually his students from Mysore that invite him to wherever they live, and he kind of comes as a guest teacher for a week or a weekend.
Mm-hmm.
But he's pretty much in Mysore for most of the year.
Mm-hmm.
I have to go. Because, you know, on the scale of what yoga is as a concept, as a philosophy, as a subject, after 10 years almost of teaching, I still know relatively little, you know, in how big it is as a scope. And I think we're all students before we're teachers.
Yeah. For sure.
You know, always we have to go back to that source and relearn and retrain and re-experience so that we can communicate better to the people that we're sharing with. Yeah.
Also, as our bodies change, things change, right? Mm. Especially in physical practice, as we evolve, as we, you know, do new things, I think our body changes and evolves. And sometimes what works for someone before, you know, and I don't know if that's the same thing with yoga, but with any kind of training, I see that if I'm doing something and my body changes and sometimes something isn't right for me anymore, and we need to kind of evolve with that. And it's nice to know that yoga has different scopes. I think a lot of us don't know. Like, we expect go downward dog, stretch out a bit. Like, most people don't have that education. And my eyes woke up a lot. Even Dubai, I think, is becoming a lot more broad with what it offers. Mm-hmm. Maybe you can touch up a bit on how, you know, what it's like here, what the environment of yoga is like here.
Yeah, I mean, I think we still come to it from a very physical perspective in the West.
Of course.
And there's nothing wrong with that. If it gets people moving their bodies, I mean, you guys, you know, work with bodies that either move too much in a certain way or don't move at all. Mm-hmm. If it's getting people to kind of get on their mat and find a little bit of inner peace and peace of mind, then I think that that's great. And usually what I generally see is that students come, they come for a physical practice, or they come for weight loss, or they come for, you know, varied reasons, you know, lower back pain, whatever it is. Mm. And I think as they give the practice a chance to kind of work, they start to get more and more interested. I've seen over the years living in Dubai that people come and then they kind of start going, oh, do you have any yoga retreats? Or I'm thinking of going to Thailand to study, you know, something, and or India, or where would you recommend? And then they start, you know, reading books, and then they start coming to me with more and more questions. And I think it builds, again, authentically and naturally like that. And so if you enter it from a philosophical standpoint, that's great, and then you might find the physical practice, or it can go the other way. I definitely think that even though there are quite traditional styles, which in some ways can be quite rigid in what you're expected to do with your body, I think we can sometimes get very bogged down in the physical, especially with a traditional practice like Ashtanga, where you follow this, like you said, the primary series, and you do this one fixed sequence, and you're expected to kind of repeat that sequence 6 times a week. The idea of Ashtanga Vinyasa when it was created is that you would progress through the sequences so that you would get, in the primary, there's a lot of forward folding. Mm-hmm. And in the second series, there's a lot of back bending, which of course balances the body. Mm-hmm. If you come into it late in life and you end up practicing primary series for 6 years, you do a lot of forward folding. You don't do much back bending. Mm. Well, that's not going to be that beneficial for the body.
Yeah.
So I think you need to find a teacher that kind of recognizes that, you know, we all have lifestyle habits. We don't all have the luxury of, you know, surrendering our daily lives and just kind of doing yoga, you know, with a teacher in India all day long, you know, to really open every part of the body in the right way, to the right extent. Mm-hmm. And like you say, Tamara, as you get older, you also have to recognize, you know, some of your aspirations or goals of what you want to be able to achieve with your body, they might be limited or they might change. Mm. So I think finding a teacher that recognizes that and, you know, modifies things when they need to be modified, or if you're injured, kind of doesn't push you too hard in one particular direction. Mm-hmm. And, you know, regular movement patterns. If you sit at a desk all day, sit at a car in a car all day, sit on an aeroplane, you know, all the time for work, and then you do yoga once a week, you have to understand how your body's going to respond to that once a week. So you know, yeah, you have to go into it with a bit of an open mind as a student, but also as a teacher, to recognize that, you know, not everyone just stretches out on their mat all day.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And especially also not living in India, where the temperature is a bit higher. I mean, I know in Dubai it's really hot right now, but in most places in the world it doesn't get as hot as it does in, for example, Mysore.
Yeah.
So I think that makes a big difference as well, doesn't it, for people?
Yeah, definitely. If you're, you know, my mum obviously lives in London, practices Mysore style four times a week, and then does, you know, a bit of self-practice. You know, she's waking up at 6 o'clock in the morning, you know, in the dark, in December or January, and driving, you know, 20 minutes and getting out. And, you know, she's 67, so she's like creaking out of the car and creaking onto the mat. And yeah, it's not the same environment. Mm. So you have to respect the, you know, your lifestyle and the conditions. I see, you know, students get frustrated, you know, they have a baby and, you know, their body changes and then they can't do the same thing. They lose their core strength.
Yeah.
They've had a C-section. They have to, you know, we all have to look at it like the asana practice, the physical practice, is there to aid your life, not to, you know, make you feel disappointed with yourself.
Sure.
Right? So it has to be realistic, and, you know, you have to approach it in a way that it's benefiting you. Mm. But it's definitely easier here in Dubai and in India than it is, you know, in the middle of winter in Europe, for sure, to kind of get out and start moving the body around. Yeah. Definitely, yeah.
So you learn about yoga as a, you know, obviously as a physical practice, and you get the spiritual mental practice. So where does the medicine tie into this? Like, do you study
the
this?
Ayurvedic medicine?
Well, no, I wouldn't say the Ayurvedic medicine, but let's say, you know, somebody comes to you with pain. Can you say, you know, if we refer a client to you and say, like, you know, Laura, this person has like really bad low back pain because they sit all day at work, and we recommend they do yoga to stretch and become, I mean, a lot of people associate yoga with flexibility, but there's a lot of strength component to it.
There should be.
You know, there should be. And there's a lot of balancing, and, you know, and then suddenly people come and think that they're going to be doing headstand, but that's not really the case. So where do you tie in, like, the physical, you know, can you recognize those things? Can you say, like, right, this is the problem. Your doctor says this is the problem. We can do almost like a rehab.
Yeah. I think yoga, you know, Krishnamacharya, who kind of devised or was kind of, I suppose, if you say that Patabi Joyce was the father of Ashtanga yoga and one of the kind of main proponents of modern yoga, Krishnamacharya was Patabi Joyce's teacher and was maybe the grandfather of Ashtanga yoga, also from Mysore. And he devised this system with Patabi Joyce, and then later in life, kind of, there's very interesting documentary about him, which now the name, of course, eludes me. But he very much shifted gear and went into yoga as therapy. And he actually used to give Patabi Joyce students with issues, and it would be like, fix him, you know, find the asanas that are working not only on a physical plane, but also on a kind of internal, because each asana has, you know, it's got its physical benefit. You might stretch the hamstring, but also by twisting, you're, you know, cleansing the internal organs of the body. And then there might be an emotional kind of element to it as well. So it works with kind of in the same way that Chinese meridians and acupuncture. It's a similar thing with yoga and the chakra system and opening up the body in an energetic way, not just in a kind of purely muscular and fascia and ligaments.
Nadis and prana.
Nadis, yeah, 72,000 energy channels.
And there's definitely some types of yoga, from the little I know, but like, for example, yin, which is more like relaxing and stretching. And then you have the faster ones that are, you know, better for people who want to, a little bit more strength, a little bit more.
But I think it's a misconception to say that Ashtanga yoga is only for kind of the fit and the healthy, because every traditional practice can be tailored to suit the individual. And that's why Mysore style is so great, because you walk in and you're not being led collectively, but you're actually learning at your own pace. And, you know, if the teacher's experienced and you're practicing as a student without ego, and the teacher is teaching you without ego, then if you modify and you have to use a block or a prop or something for your knee or something for your lower back, it's there to heal you. So the primary series is Yoga Chikitsa. It's yoga therapy. It's there for cleansing the digestive system. And then the second series, Nadi Shodhana, is there for cleansing the nervous system, so which is why there's a lot of backbending. So there's a science behind how you're approaching this practice. I do think that just over the years of seeing more and more bodies, you asked about kind of can I recognize, you know, certain things, or people come to me with particular issues. If it's quite a simple issue, I'm not a doctor. So I need for the student to be responsible to tell me what's going on in their body. Sometimes it's externally very obvious for me to see that someone's got an issue with their lower back or their knee or their shoulder, or, you know, they have scoliosis or lordosis, or, you know. But otherwise, I think it's just over the years of adjusting and seeing patterns. And a lot of us have similar injuries.
Of course, same patterns. Because we do the same thing.
Because we do the same stuff.
Typing,
you know, people have wrist problems, thumb problems through texting too much, you know. So I think over the years you get more and more experienced, as I'm sure you guys have the same thing. Someone comes in and immediately, you know, in your year one of treating people, you might have had to kind of, you know, do a few different things. And now you've seen so many people that it's like, yeah, I know how to treat this particular issue. If it's something that I don't feel that I'm qualified to fix, I will refer, you know, I think it we all have to work together. Yeah, I refer people to, you know, to you guys. Mm. I recommend acupuncture to people. I recommend massage. I tell them to get therapy balls. I don't think that there's any one fixed solution with the lifestyle that we live.
Yeah.
Mm. Unless, like I said, you're going to dedicate your life just to stretching around on your mat all day and you don't have to do anything else.
Yeah.
Stress gets into the body. Course, lifestyle gets into the body. And then it manifests with repetitive movement.
Mm.
I don't think it's always, you know, people sometimes say, oh, I hurt myself doing yoga. Maybe, but sometimes, you know, you had that weak point through a lifestyle pattern, and then the yoga just kind of highlighted what was going on inside your body already, maybe.
And also, I think we move, most people, like I see some of the steps that my patients take, you know, they come to me like, look, I did 2,000 a day. I'm like, 2,000? Like, that's nothing. But we also move in very, like, one-dimensional planes. Like, we sit, we get up, we move forward. And the thing I love about yoga, which unfortunately injures some people, but I think is very important, is that not a lot of sports are three-dimensional. And with yoga, you're twisting, your back bends, I think, are one of the healthiest things. And in medicine, we have McKenzie extension protocols for patients with disc pain. Mm. And what we try to do is get them to extend, because we're so used to sitting and flexing all the time. We're not used to opening up. Mm. And it's one of the best movements that you can do, gradually, of course. Mm. But over time, if you can get into back bend, it's phenomenal for your discs.
Yeah.
And some people want things quickly, so they want to get in right away, and that's how they hurt themselves.
Yeah. I think everyone wants things quickly.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. We're the culture of instant gratification, instant satisfaction.
100%.
You know? Order, delivery, drive through, you know, text now, everything.
Yeah, reply to
everything
me.
Now.
But, text me back.
But it's very true. We want things really quick. And like everything, I think progress comes with time. But I think what I love about it and why I recommend a lot of my clients to do it is because it's very three-dimensional. And if you're, you know, going to injure your back from turning around, picking up something behind you, whereas if you're doing a lunge twist and you're allowing your body to get into these ranges of motion, when you apply that to real life, you don't get injured.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think it's a great complementary therapy and practice to everything, you know, even for me as a runner and you know, weightlifter, I like to think of myself when I do yoga, it kills. But it also opens my body up to so many things.
Yeah.
And that's the biggest recommendation I can to, you know, to our clients is that explore your body, explore what you can do, explore your limitations, also know your limitations, but try different things.
Yeah.
And I think it's really interesting.
I think a lot of people are quite, especially kind of just going back to backbending, a lot of people have a fear around backbending because they feel so much in their lumbar, in their lower back. And the way that I try and teach it is understanding that, you know, in most yoga backbends anyway, the hip flexors, the quads, you know, the shoulders, they all play a part in making the movement. Mm. I mean, obviously you guys are the experts, you can correct me, but it's only 25% of bend in the spine. Everything else has to come from the whole body. So, you know, it's understanding the body as a whole, like holistically. And
you just said it, it's about feeling.
Yeah.
Like, it's not about I'm bending to the point of pain. It's bending to the point of feeling.
Yeah,
of
where
awareness.
Do you feel?
Yeah, you know. Like,
and I think people can get intimidated sometimes, especially in a mixed level class. If you've got someone who's really bendy next to you on the mat, you know, as teachers, our job is to constantly remind people to not compare yourself. And that's, you know, it's human nature, right? To look left and see the girl in down dog, you know, in the perfect downward facing dog or what we envision it to be. I don't think Instagram's helped too much with that idea of, you know, how asanas should look rather than, like Tamara says, how they should feel. And, you know, we're all kind of anatomically basically the same. And yet what we've experienced in our body over our lifetime is completely different. And therefore, you know, the asana is going to look very different with me than it is with you. So, yeah, taking it to the point of where you feel something, and that might look very different to the person next to you on the mat.
I think a lot of that is lost on people who have never tried it, and maybe they go to a random class and then they go, oh no, it wasn't for me, I didn't like it. Whenever I hear that, it upsets me a little bit. I'm like, well, go to a different class, find a different teacher, a different style. Just because it didn't work for you once or twice doesn't mean yoga is not for you.
No. Or you get people going, I'm too stiff for yoga.
I'm not good enough. I couldn't do
you're
it.
You're the people that, you know,
should.
That need to come.
Yeah.
Or it's slow and boring.
Or it's slow and boring because they tried maybe
on
one
your
particular
teacher
style.
Too.
I think it does. I think it definitely does.
Finding the right person.
You know, it's become, you know, a bit of a trend now. that you know, everyone and their mother is a yoga teacher. So, you know, it's
by the way, you're looking at one right ahead of you.
James is a yoga teacher. Well, not anymore.
Well, I haven't taught in a long time,
Awesome.
But yeah, I trained in 2003.
Amazing.
And did it through college, paid my way through that.
Amazing.
And yeah, and then as soon as I qualified as a chiropractor, I literally didn't have time to keep on teaching it.
Well, you should start teaching a staff class once a week.
I beg him.
Well, we just had a bit of an OM session before we started.
A meditation session. Not a movement session.
It was good.
But
did
it was
you
amazing.
Notice I fell asleep?
I did. Yes. I came around with the lavender oil, tried to touch your shoulder, and I heard, you know, and I'm like, oops.
I did that typical man thing and woke myself up with a snore.
Oh, wow. Right.
You heard me.
Oh, no. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, I think that there's, you know, there's a lot of people that are qualifying as yoga teachers. Mm. And, you know, it's not a regulated industry in the same way that maybe yours is. So I definitely encourage people to, you know, not just try one class. And, you know, maybe the teacher wasn't that experienced. Mm. You know, that we all have to start somewhere. Or maybe their training wasn't a particularly good one. It's not a regulated system.
Yeah.
So keep going out and, you know, finding different teachers. Find someone that resonates with you, that you know, you trust, because your body will also respond physically. You know, fascia even just responds to touch, you know. So if you, if you find a teacher that you think is, you know, has some value and that you respond to, then that's who you have to find.
Yeah.
Yeah, don't write it off.
With patients, I sometimes find that, you know, they should just go online, look up, you know, the sun salutations, right, namaskar, and just give it a bash to see what happens. Do 10 of those in the morning, see how your life changes. If it's positive in any way, then just go to a class and get started from there.
Yeah.
And a lot of stuff with rollers and trigger point balls and all those sort of myofascia release component. You've heard of Jill Miller? Does yoga tune up? You should check her stuff out. She's basically mixed up yoga with myofascia release.
There's a teacher here that I think does some of her work. Emily Goldstein does yoga tune up workshops here in Dubai.
Right.
Yeah. So using trigger point balls kind of within asana practice to do myofascia release. Yeah.
Yeah.
So what about the mental and emotional? I want to touch on that a bit. So people are very, very stressed in our environment, I find. And, you know, we see a lot of very stressed out patients and stress that translate into pain. So, you know, from your perspective, how does yoga help with that? How does it help with focus? How does it help? Obviously, the discipline of the practice. What about the emotional side? The, you know, some people also, you know, they kind of poke at yoga. They have a bit of fun, you know, super spiritual, you're om vegan Zen master, like, you know.
Yeah.
But, it, you know, it's a lifestyle, yes, I understand. But how do we remove that kind of image,
it's not tree hugging cliche. I don't think you can. I mean, I think that people will think what they want to think. I think, you know, talking about Instagram being not the best source of you know, information or kind of making people feel disappointed about their bodies when you have all these, you know, amazing Instagram, you know, gorgeous girls, stars in bikinis doing handstands on, you know, freestanding on a beach in the Maldives. You can kind of look at yourself and go, oh, well, what's the point?
Yeah.
I don't think we'll change everyone's perception. And I don't think you can also, you know, say, come to your first class and you'll find absolute peace and peace of mind. It's a process. I think if you just start by, you know, taking some time, and it doesn't have to be yoga either. You know, it's funny me as a yoga teacher saying this, but if it's getting on a surfboard or going for a run, it's anything that gets you quiet in your mind and anything where you're not on your phone. So for my students, you know, who are newer to the practice, it's like, just put your phone away and take 90 minutes and just listen to your breathing. Mm. And whether you're moving or whether you're seated for 5 of those minutes or whether you start just introducing a very short meditation practice every morning where before you check your phone and before you speak to anyone or send a WhatsApp, you just sit just for 5 minutes without, you know, looking at that screen. And you have to integrate it slowly. You know, the mind is not, you know, very welcoming to you saying, okay, I'm going to just start getting up at 5 a.m. and sitting for an hour and a half. It won't do it.
No.
But if you can just do it on a piecemeal basis, I think the peace of mind and the meditation aspect will just naturally start to integrate itself into your body. But it's not an overnight thing. You're not going to go to your first yoga class and find enlightenment unfortunately.
Yeah, the sort of the physical aspect is will open the door to the rest of yoga.
Yeah, it's a gateway. That's all it is. But as I say, you know, if yoga's not your thing, and running is, or surfing is, or rollerblading is, whatever gets you out of your normal routine and just puts you into some kind of movement and some kind of meditative state.
Headspace
where we're not on social media. I think that that's a good thing.
Social media tomorrow. You hear that?
I love it. Tomorrow.
I love it.
Tomorrow's checking her phone right now.
As I'm posting videos of Laura. But I do love social media because it's helped, I wouldn't say educate, but kind of inform me of what's going on in the community.
Definitely.
And
it's necessary.
And it's very necessary. I think, you know, even in medicine, like people text me all the time and ask me, like, how do you treat, you know, like my ankle strain or my hip, whatever. And I'm just like, I don't know you. Like, I don't know what you've done or who you are, or your life, or, you know, what your ankle looks like. You know, so definitely it's amazing how much it's bridged people together, but, it can also create a lot of misconceptions and stuff. But
people learn yoga through Instagram. It's not really, you know, my teacher would, you know, drop down if I told him that people were self-taught.
Do they know what Instagram is in India?
I showed him. I set up an account for him. I think I posted one picture about 2 years ago. He hasn't put anything else up there. But he was like, what does this mean, self-taught? I mean, it's not a concept in yoga.
Yeah.
You know, you find a teacher.
Yeah.
And in anything in life, you learn from those around you. I think, you know, we learn here on a daily basis from the practitioners around us and our patients. And I think life is about, you know, the experiences you have with others, right?
Yeah.
And that's how you learn.
Yeah. You need someone who knows what they're talking about.
Yeah.
You can't get away from that parampara, like that guru to student, teacher to student relationship is very important in yoga. So, just to look at someone on Instagram and, you know, try and copy what they do. Like Tamara said, you don't know that person's body. You don't know what your body's capable of. And it opens up a whole kind of, it's great for the community.
Because it also pushes people to move.
Because it pushes people.
But people who have never done anything
push them
before.
To a class with an experienced teacher, not just to kind of play around and, you know, potentially hurt themselves. And then you guys end up having to treat people.
It's good for business.
good for business. Get on Instagram, guys.
That's it. What about diet? Are you a vegetarian, a vegan? I know.
I don't like labels. I would say I haven't eaten meat or fish or eggs, or much dairy for a very long time. Mm-hmm. I would say I'm about 95% vegan.
Mm-hmm.
I'm partial to, when I'm in Spain, I go to Ibiza every year sometimes to teach and sometimes just to practice. I like Manchego cheese.
bitch.
So when I have tapas, I have, you know, I have the old bit of cheese.
Yeah.
But mainly I don't buy cheese or cook with any dairy. So yeah, I'm basically a vegan. Yeah.
I read a book on yoga a couple of years ago and what are the actual benefits and risks associated with it that have been actually proven. And one of them was kind of busting the whole myth of sort of weight loss. And the fact that it tends more to be a mental thing as to why that people lose weight doing yoga, because they have that sort of peace of mind. They're not a slave to their appetite and they
less
get
stress.
More control over that emotional side of eating.
Yeah.
As opposed to...
I'm a slave to my appetite for sure.
Yeah, do a lot of power yoga.
There's chocolate all day, every day.
Right now. I think, what is it? 70% food? 30% movement.
Yeah, well, you can't out-train.
You can be doing yoga 6 times a week, but it's not a massive cardio hit, thing.
No.
So do I lose weight when I go to India? Yes, but that's mainly because I'm kind of just eating, you know, dal and rice and, you know, sleeping really early and I've got nothing else to do and I just practice yoga four hours a day and chill out. Mm. So it's conducive to how you're feeling and what you're eating, I think, far more than... You know, you're hitting the mat every day. It might be a nice kind of byproduct that you might get a little bit more toned, but it's definitely not going to dramatically change your weight.
No.
It's just not.
No.
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 And I think actually vegans, we have a problem for putting it actually on weight. I put on weight when I became a vegan.
Yeah.
Because I started doing a lot of, you know, go-to snack for a vegan is avocado on toast, which is a fat-carb combination, which is not the best thing to kind of tone down.
So good.
So I think, you know, you have to be wise that the yogic diet is a basically a vegetarian diet without without eggs, but with dairy. Or you can go vegan, but you have to be very careful about your food combining, that you're still getting all the vitamins and the proteins that you need. You can't be a lazy eater if you're a veggie or a vegan. You have to, you know, make sure that you're getting your balance of nutrients and, vegetables, or you can suffer a lot from anemia and iron deficiency or B12. I've had that over the years where I've had to kind of supplement because I've not been paying attention to how I'm eating. I've been eating healthy, but I haven't been getting the right balance of stuff. So that's really important as well. And that affects your energy levels, and it affects you, you know, emotionally as well. If you're really depleted in one particular vitamin, you can be moody, your, you know, cognitive response is slow. Like, it, you know, it's not good.
And the whole point of being vegetarian or vegan, right, is to feel light and to feel, you know, also to respect the earth and the ground and all these things, but also to feel good.
Yeah.
Like,
I mean, from
to
a yoga,
feel light in an over-consuming society where we all, you know, obviously eat too much.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And we, you know, a lot of processed food. So it's moving away from that, but also on an energetic level for yogis, it's the belief that not eating meat is ahimsa. It's non-violence. So what you're doing when you're eating meat is you're taking on the kind of the negativity or the negative energy of that animal who's who's been kind of stressed and killed, basically. So you're doing harm by eating meat. So that's the kind of on an energetic plane. If you look at it on a, you know, purely the meat industry and the dairy industry, I think most people would, you know, if they watch certain documentaries, they'd probably veer to that to that way for most of their week anyway, you know. So if you can cut meat a little bit out of your diet, then that's a good thing, guys.
Sure. It's good for the planet.
Meatless Mondays, at least, if not meatless every day.
And then it's Taco Tuesdays.
So and then it's Taco Tuesday.
It becomes really difficult.
You can, but you can have veggie tacos.
Yeah.
One last question for you. I always remember my first yoga book. Do you have a good book to recommend to any listeners?
Yes. So actually, the best book, because there's a lot of books out there that are, you know, very dense kind of either anatomical textbooks or kind of big philosophy books, which I think, you know, you can only really dip in and out of. You can't kind of read cover to cover in one sitting. The best book that I would say would be How Yoga Works by Michael Geshe. And it's actually taking the sutras of Patanjali and putting them into a story. So it's a novel. It's a fictional story. And the main character is actually a girl, which is quite nice, seeing as a lot of kind of yoga stories and books. I mean, it's written by a guy, but it's about a female. So female empowerment.
I'm going to read
that. So How Yoga Works, by Michael Geshe.
What about you? What's your favorite yoga book?
Laura's class. Unfortunately, I don't read
enough.
No, I don't read a lot of books about exercise. I think I like to read a lot of.
You
books.
Just do it.
Yeah, I just do it. I like to experience it and feel how it is. You know, I do read a few books about running because a lot of runners get, you know, they get into some crazy situations and you know, ultramarathon runners in the forest and in the middle. I kind of enjoy that. But I've never read books about yoga.
Have you read The Essential Shihan?
I haven't.
That's a book about a marathon runner. But I've given it to a few of my students as gifts. And I mean, they're runners. I haven't just kind of given it to them randomly. But all of them that have read it have actually come back and said that there's a real yoga element to it. Because he's talking about this kind of psychology of running, which again is kind of just getting into a meditative, like positive. I mean, you must have felt that when you just ran.
Yeah. It was about learning how to turn off and how to control your mind. And, you know, there's always that two thoughts in your head, like, I don't want to do this. Another thought saying, you can do this. Calm down. You know, listen to yourself. Be present. Be in the moment, which is a lot of the same principles as yoga. Like, be here now and
get
go of don't worry about later or what happened. Or just worry about right now. And that's I think, what a lot of sports kind of teach you is awareness and body awareness and listening to your body, which a lot of people around us don't know how to do.
No.
You know, which makes me sad. Like sometimes I tell people, like, stand up straight and, you know, squeeze your bum, and they're like, what? You know, like, I'm like, it's there, feel it, squeeze it, like squeeze your calves, squeeze your feet when you're sitting down, like rotate your ankles. Do you ever do that? Are you ever aware of your body?
No.
And a lot of people are not, especially because we're so busy and we're multitasking and we're in such a rush all the time that we forget to slow down. And I think that's the number one basis of health for me. Like just
feel what's going on in your body.
Feel. You said it. It's just feel and feel, you know, what's going on. You can tell. You can tell how to heal yourself, what to do, what your body's craving.
Definitely.
If it's you're craving sugar because you're hungry, or are you craving sugar because you're stressed and tired?
Yeah.
So I think it's really important for people to kind of wake up a bit and
listen a bit more to what their body's telling them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for coming in today.
Thanks, Jane.
It's been lovely talking to you. Your website, you're on Instagram.
It's all just Laura Farrier Yoga, one word, keeping
it
simple.
Yeah. Perfect. Okay, well, anyone can get in touch with Laura through the website or Instagram. Or
she teaches at Zen Yoga also.
Right, Zen Yoga, yeah.
And she's got some fun, not this year. I usually do some yoga retreats, but you do some local ones, right?
Yeah, I usually do twice a year at Ziggy Bay in Oman. And this year I'm actually just taking a break for the summer, and I'm doing my kind of my own practice and study, but usually I do a retreat at least once a year in Europe as well. So it's all on my website.
It's Ibiza, you guys. So it's yoga and partying.
No partying tomorrow.
Always
just yoga-ing.
Life's too short.
Thank you guys so much.
Thanks for being here. Thank you so much. I hope you all go try her class and stay tuned for next episode.
Cheerio. Bye, everybody.
Bye.